on the AM and FM 947 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. I hope you're having a great day out there, riding the roller coaster life of being an entrepreneur. It can certainly have its ups and downs. I have been on both parts, both tracks, I promise you. We have a great show for us today, though. Gary McDermott is going to teach us how to be and how to have a successful mindset. And that so much determines how all the rest of it plays out, right? If you go into the day saying it's a pretty good day and I'm going to survive it, maybe even make some progress, that's very different than going into the day where, I can't, this is going to be horrible. That day is going to turn out very differently, isn't it? So today's going to turn out great because you get some Gary McDermott. After that, in our greatest hits section, we lost a server for some of our earliest files, which had some greatest hits on it. And so we are rebuilding by bringing those shows back, the great parts, you know, just the good guests, and restocking right on a new server. And so we have the entrepreneur publisher, David Hancock. He runs Morgan James Publishing. So David is fantastic. He's been a friend of the show since this interview aired, so probably 12 years ago. We've had many, many of his authors, the people, the books that he's published. Those authors have been on the show, and, you know, we've tweeted back and forth. Thanks for, you know, anyway, so he is a good guy. That is a great company, Morgan James. So there is the show for you. Before we get started with that, though, I wanted to give you all an update on my latest book, which is unfortunately not being published by David Hancock. We decided early on that we wanted to self-publish for a lot of the reasons, and I'll give you some now. One was we make more money and get more control and don't have to worry about that phase of going and finding a publisher. And it drops. The book comes out in 19 days, and we are still writing it because there's still new information coming out. A little bit of information came out last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, that the AI uses so much water in Texas that it equals all of the other water used in Texas, that much is just for AI. And here is the scariest thing. Every time you hit enter on ChatGPT, it's the amount of a 1 liter bottle of water just disappeared off Earth. Every time you hit enter on ChatGPT, 1 liter of bottle of water disappears off of Earth. So anyway, that book that we're writing, The Real Environmentalist, it's doing great in pre-orders. It has already gotten to number one in 3 different categories. And so I'm very confident that on its opening day, September 30th, which is so critical that you have a lot of pre-orders so that that day when it becomes available, that it drops, boom, with a lot. So it gets a really high ranking, and then we'll continue to ride that out. We have 19 days to get it finished, but we're still adding in cool stuff like that. And we are 100% on schedule. It is a beautiful cover. I love the cover. Go check it out. It is leaves falling down and turning into dollar bills. So go check it out and buy it, please, now in pre-order, because that's when it helps us the most. Anyway, we'll be back in a second with a great show. Be right back. Welcome back to the show again. Thank you so very much for being with us. Very excited to introduce my first guest. Please welcome Gary McDermott to the show. He is known as the cash flow engineer. Very interesting career. He is a sought after speaker, private investor, serial entrepreneur, professional engineer, and retired Navy officer. Thank you for your service. He has had some real cool successes in getting his message out. He was on Amazon Prime series Speak Up, 3rd season, talking about setting your goals or someone else will, which is also the name of his new debut book. He has started a couple of companies that I want to point out. One, USA Private Equities, a company that helps acquire and manage real estate, and also Pro Growth Solution, a financial services company offering tax strategy, accounting, those sort of things. And I'm excited about the new book, Set Your Own Goals or Someone Else Will, How to Overcome Self-Limiting Beliefs and Get Things Done. It is 5-star rated on that Amazon place. Gary, welcome. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you for having me, Jim.
I am excited. I'm really worried, though, because I don't think that I'm qualified to do this. I'm not really good enough. And I'm a fake. I'm an imposter. I know that I'm not really qualified. How do I deal with these self-limiting beliefs?
I was going to say that sounds like some self-limiting beliefs. And we just
trying to set you up for the easy one, buddy. Go ahead and give us a slam dunk on that.
Well, we just got to unlock the mind a little bit, open it up, get some of that big thinking, and the way that I've learned, especially because people would always ask me how I was able to do it. So after getting asked so many different times, I've basically reverse engineered it. Since at one point I was a full-time engineer doing design for nuclear power plants, and now transitioned to cash flow engineer, helping generate cash flow for businesses and individuals. What I've learned is, and the way I explain it is, three mindset shifts to really remove some of those self-limiting beliefs. And I could jump right in.
Go
or I could just,
yeah, I love things that come with numbers. I'm, you know, autistic in that way, I guess. I love the numbers. Give me the three mindset shifts.
Yeah, so the three mindset shifts, and they relate to me, and talking to other folks that have achieved success, you know, they may have different ways to present it, but the way that it resonated for me is the easiest way for me to explain it. And so when you talk about that first self-limiting belief, like imposter syndrome, the way that this is the technique or the shift is really visualization, and the way that I explain it is there's an adage that goes, you have to see it before you believe it. And the way that I approach it is I flip that adage, and it's, you have to believe it before you see it. So there are folks out there that think that, you know, they have to be able to see that it's possible for, especially for themselves. If you come from a place where maybe you were born into a system and you don't think you can move into a next level, you might not believe it. But I challenge you to believe that you can do something bigger than yourself. Believe that you can do something greater than you thought you could. The moment you believe it, then you will start to see it. And so that's really the premise of that first shift, is to be able to visualize. If I told you to think of a pink elephant, you would visualize it immediately.
Immediately, yeah.
So why can't you think of yourself being successful?
So when you say that, what do you mean? Do you mean me on a yacht, or do you mean me in a big room with people applauding and throwing, you know, dollar bills at me? What do you mean by seeing it? What am I seeing?
So we have all the, you know, the five senses: seeing, tasting, touching, hearing, like hearing. Actually visualize, smell, visualize what your success will be. And so when you're starting, right, you might have capped yourself. You might have had that self-limiting belief, but you also have the ability, just like I shared of thinking of a pink elephant, you have the ability to think beyond what you would normally visualize. And so that's where it starts. So just think about, what does the next level of success look like for you? What would it feel like? What would it smell like? What would it taste like? What would people react? What kind of feelings would be generated in your body if you were in that position? And that's just the start. And obviously you could do, you know, there's different levels of techniques that you could do, but that's really the opening or the first couple of steps to get on that journey of visualization.
Okay, keep going.
So now that we understand how to think bigger and actually believe in ourselves and believe that we could do great things, the next step is basically to just look at the difference in mindset between scarcity and abundance. So for me, I grew up in an era or just a culture where I was told that you have to be successful, you have to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. That was sort of a mindset that was put into me. And I didn't know that that actually instilled self-limiting beliefs by the time that I didn't become an engineer right away. I was forced to join the military out of high school because there was no money for college. So I got this rude awakening my senior year and was basically walked out the door because that was the plan. There was no money, but the plan was just join the military. And the other half of that is my father was actually an accountant. So accountants by nature are conservative. And when it comes to money, and the military, me and my brother, we would get lined up as kids. And my father being in the Army Reserve for most of his career would line us up and basically teach us the school of hard knocks. So he'd have us fall in, you know, Ted Hutt, dress right, dress. And then he'd give us lessons like money doesn't grow on trees. Life is not a bowl of cherries. There's no free lunch. So between being kind of told, to amount to anything, you got to be one of these few professions. Oh, and by the way, money doesn't grow on trees. It's very scarce. It really, I don't want to say the word poisoned, but I didn't know what I didn't know at that time. And my whole first half of my life, I was really afraid that I needed to save every dollar that I had. And to the point where you go into, you know, your friends want to go out, have some drinks or go out to lunch, and I would just get water. So now I do that for health reasons, but before I did it because I was just afraid that if I spent money on a soda, I'd have less money and I might run out and then bad things could happen. So the transition of that and just really understanding that there's so much money on this planet. In fact, if you look at, you know, governments printing cash all over the world, there may be more cash in existence than any time ever. And so just opening your mind now that you can believe, we talked about visualization, but just having now that understanding that the reality is there's more money available, there's enough for everybody to go around, turn competition into collaboration and embrace that everywhere you go. That mindset shift alone is what helped me to just realize, like, I would go from only ordering water to now if I'm going to go to an event, I'll buy the premium ticket. Because if I buy the premium ticket, that means everybody around me has also bought the premium ticket. Now I'm surrounded by like-minded individuals, and I'm more likely to be around somebody with that positive mindset. And the one thing that I've learned is when you talk to successful people and you ask them questions, you won't detect words like, I hope I will, or when I get through this, then maybe I'll do that. There's an ironclad mindset among the successful. And this nugget is one way that you can move towards that stronger mindset and believe in the abundance mentality.
I love that idea. I love that. And, you know, we do have abundance. I don't believe that we're going to run out of oil, energy. You know, I just don't think that ever happens. So, I'm very contrarian all the way there. I'm just incredibly positive about the future, especially with more nuclear power, but we'll come back to that at the end. All right. So ready for number three, then? We have believe, scarcity, abundance, and then three.
Yeah. So we just talked about the abundance mentality, being able to invest in yourself. You buy that premium ticket, and now you're with other like-minded people that also buy the premium ticket. So that's a segue into this next one, which I call position yourself for success. And so what that means is that you can curate your calendar and how you interact for the next year by just positioning yourself around the like-minded people. You've heard the adage that you're the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with, or yes, birds of a feather. And so one of the biggest challenges that when I've talked to people that have achieved high levels of success is that you can't take everyone with you. And a lot of people, you know, that you've heard, you may have heard, you know, it's lonely at the top. Well, what that really means is, and one of the realities of making these mindset shifts is being successful is that sometimes you do have to remove yourself from negativity, and you may do an inventory, and you may find that as you start making these mindset shifts, some of the folks in your inner circle may not want to make those mindset shifts or may react differently to you. And at a certain point, it may be the only way is to, when you look at who do you spend the most time with, if there's some negative energy or some folks that don't have that mindset shift, it can pull you down. And so positioning yourself from success is making sure that you put yourself in an environment that will be positive, that will push you forward instead of bring you down. And there's so many different levels to it, but professionally, you know, if you're in a business or if there's something you're trying to achieve, putting yourself in a position to be around high achievers, or if you're trying to do business with a certain clientele or a certain audience, putting yourself in a position where everyone around you at events or in your gym or in your social circles is able, willing, and qualified to do business with you. It's a new dimension on a new perspective on curating, you know, where do you go? Are you going to change your routine? Are you going to maybe move? Are you going to go to a gym that's here? Are you going to do social groups, join an organization? And how you look at that, just knowing that you can control the people that you spend the time with and the places that you can position yourself in to bring the most likely or increase your odds of success. And that's really what positioning yourself for success is, the third mindset shift.
All right. I love it. Great stuff. All right. Let's move on to goals right now. What are your strategies, beliefs for goal setting? Once a year, January, take a business card and I write down goals in several categories: family goals, personal goals, professional goals, radio goals, travel goals, and religious. And one or two words only, and I try to give it to my wife so she can hold me accountable. You like that system?
Right.
And then tell me what you're doing. Let's talk about goals.
Yeah. So once you've unlocked the mind and you've made these mindset shifts, this will help you to set goals bigger than you probably would have done before. And then the system or the execution, I break down into a 5-step method, and it does involve accountability and a little bit of teamwork, because if left to our own devices, sometimes things are a little bit harder. So what are those 5 steps, right? The first one, so visualize, seek counsel, work backwards, set targets, commit, and then find an accountability partner. So those are the 5 steps. So let's just quickly go into them so that you can remember this and execute on your own. But the visualization, we talked a little bit about it. So when we talked about unlocking the mind, when you have the goal, you really have to visualize that goal all the time, morning and night. You gotta use your senses and put yourself in there. You want to create that physiological response in your body. So just imagine some folks, they like cars and maybe they like luxury cars and they have a certain one in mind. If you hear, you visualize yourself inside that car, you can smell the leather, you can hear the sound of revving the engine. If you actually visualize that, you will actually generate that chemical response in your body. You want to do that with your goals. Once you visualize it, now you want to actually get some real advice. So if I use this because, you know, I wrote a book, and if I were to, when I was first looking at how to write the book and or just had the idea, that this next step, seek counsel. I could have asked friends and family, but none of them had written a book before. And oftentimes, if you just ask for advice, the person that you're asking the advice may not necessarily be qualified to give you the advice. So we want to get away from that. And that's why we call it seek counsel. You want to find somebody that's maybe done it at a high level, whatever you're trying to do, and ask that. Get good advice, seek counsel. Don't just ask anybody. The next step, is to, once you've sought counsel and you can visualize a goal, you know what it looks like as your end state. Now you work backwards and you set targets. So if you want to read 20 books a year and you know that you have to read a certain number of pages every day to be able to get to that total, you figure out what the math is so that, you know, whether you measure the period of a week, you measure it a day, find out what the target needs to be each day or each month or each week so that you can stay on track and hit the goal with some margin. But in doing so, make sure that you set the target so that it's reasonable and achievable in your weakest moment. So don't just say, I want to read 100 pages a day or 100, or, you know, 50 pages a day. And then if you have a rough day and you're just so tired and you just want to go to bed, make sure that the target is reasonable. So if you could read 5 pages and that gets you to your goal, 5 pages, maybe that takes you a few minutes. You could do that on your weakest moment. You don't want to set your targets so that you fail, then you fail again, and that's a slippery slope. So work backwards, set real targets that you can track, and that will put you on your path to success.
Can I interject for just a second, Gary?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love the working backwards scenario, that idea, and I just want to throw out one more use for it. Say you want to make $1,000 next year. And you know that your product sells for $100. So how many sales do I need? I need 10 sales. And then I work backwards and say, okay, if I need 10 yeses, I know I only get 1 out of 4. So I need to talk to 40 people. And I also know that half the emails I send out never get responded to. So I actually need to send out 80 emails to get to 40 meetings. You see what I'm doing? This is not my method. Someone else came up with this, but I use the working backwards to help define the goal and then figure out what I have to do to achieve that goal. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So actually I do go into all the math and the conversion rates and the numbers in the my book.
Great. So we're on the same page.
And that is exactly the science of it. Just trying to keep it a little bit high level because sometimes it's hard to do math. Anybody that might be listening to this, math sometimes it gives me a headache, even though I'm an engineer.
Yep. All right. Next step, number 4.
And so number 4 is really, this is what I call it commit. And what this means, and the way that I executed this is when you have the goal. And a lot of people don't do this. Do you write down your goal? Absolutely. So when I say commit, it means not only have we visualized it, we've gotten counsel, and we've worked backwards and we set targets, but write down the goal. I wrote down when I had some really big goals, I would write them down in the morning and at night. I would write down multiple goals when I woke up in the morning, and I'd write the same goal when I woke up. Or right before I went to bed. When you take something that's in your mind and you put it to paper, you're bringing something into the reality and writing it and memorializing it. There's even some, I think it's a Harvard study that talks about note-taking and actually writing something down that you hear and how you're more likely to remember it. So the same science of being able to write down notes, writing down your goal and committing to it, sharing it, telling the world, embracing it, holding yourself accountable and believing in it. That's what we're committing. And then the last step, and perhaps one of the most important ones, is finding that accountability partner. And if you find the right accountability partner, it may be the person that you sought counsel from. But a lot of times when you're seeking counsel, it might be somebody at the top of the industry, and they may not necessarily have the time to be your accountability partner. So it's very reasonable that might be a different person. However, finding somebody that's like-minded, maybe trying to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish or something similar, is very important because we all have weak moments. No matter how solid or how much progress we've made on our mindset shifts, there are certain things that can happen where we have a relapse or where we slip a little bit, and having somebody that can keep us strong, and ideally we can help them achieve their goal or keep them strong, is a very important piece of this to push and maintain the momentum and the effort to achieve the goal. So with that are the five steps to execute the now bigger goals than we ever thought we could do.
I love it. I love it. Great book, and I am wholeheartedly behind it, and see why it is five-star rated. We only have a couple of minutes left, Gary, and I want to go off topic. My understanding is that the nuclear power plants in the United States are second or third generation, and that some of the French companies, one French company, Alcalor or something, and I'm not sure about that, don't quote me on that, has come up with fourth generation, maybe even fifth generation, that are much simpler, much safer. Where do you stand on nuclear power, and how safe are we? And do you know about these fourth, fifth generation plants?
Yeah, so I've been kind of out of the nuclear power field for quite some time now, more than 10 years. However, there was a couple of different questions you asked there, and I'll try to step through them. As far as, you know, nuclear safety, I've always felt, having been an operator, you know, being in charge of the operations, the maintenance, the training of nuclear power plants in my career, and even some of the design to improve the safety, especially against disasters and loss of AC power. I spent quite a bit of my career working on improvements to those systems. I found that nuclear power is in general safe, and in some ways it's over engineered with multiple redundancies. Like, to give you the example, I mean, it could take you a couple hours to change a light bulb in nuclear power because of the layers of procedures, checks and balances to make sure in certain systems with the reactor that everything is done correctly and safely. So, and then as far as technology, there may be a shift. So in the United States, there's always been a challenge with the regulatory environment to be able to put up a new plant. Although nuclear power is very, it does have in general a safe track record, and it can generate a lot of power, clean power in a lot of ways. So what happens is the regulatory environment may be difficult here in the United States to just put up a bunch of new plants. However, the world in general does need this source of energy it's cleaner than some of the other sources of energy out there and can provide significant energy. Even to put in a perspective, on the aircraft carrier that I was on, we had 500 megawatt reactor plants, a gigawatt of power. We could power cities with that aircraft carrier. Just if we reverse hooked it up into the electric grid in a city, we could power many, many, many homes. So when you look at the size and you look at that as a you know, bang for buck generation of power, you could see where some countries may be willing to push for regulation or push for nuclear power to move forward maybe quicker because it is a viable solution. So what you're seeing now is a little bit of that. And then also there's a shift to, when you talk about what I just mentioned with the aircraft carrier, you know, moving a power plant, there's small modular reactors is a concept where instead of having these big base load 14, you know, like here where I live, there's three 1.4, 1400 megawatt reactor plants at the Arizona nuclear station. You could put a small nuclear reactor, small modular reactor, in a smaller city. So that's that decentralized or some of that concept is I think where the nuclear power field may be going is to bring some of these smaller decentralized reactors so that you can put them throughout the throughout cities and regions, as opposed to having these bigger plants and then having these big grid systems. So that's just what I suspect, but I have, again, I've been fairly out of the nuclear power loop for quite some time.
Yeah, but once a nuke, you're always a nuke, you know, so you're still glowing. You still know the stuff.
That's true. It's pretty hard to remove the radiation. Half-life's and some of that is fairly long.
Gary, again, great stuff, and I really love the book and your message. Congratulations. How do we find out more, follow you online, get a copy of the book, all that stuff, please?
Yeah, so easiest way is setyourgoalsbook.com. I also have Gary McDermid, MacDermid, GaryMcDermid.com, and Gary McDermid on pretty much all social media. So encourage you to take a look at setyourgoalsbook.com. I have some pre-information that kind of summarize what we talked about today on the mindset shifts and even the five steps to set goals that you never thought you could achieve before.
Fantastic. Gary, thank you so much for being with us, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you for having me. It has been a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Likewise. And we will be right back.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one.
You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question, and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
Welcome back to School for Startups Radio. Hope you're having a great day and using today to make yourself a better person, a better entrepreneur. And I hope that you're building your company so that it's 10 times bigger than Google in the next 6 months, right? Anyway, very excited to introduce you to my next guest. His name is David Hancock. He is the founder of Morgan James Publishing. If you don't know Morgan James, they are the definitive entrepreneur publishing house. Tons of great entrepreneurship books come out of there. And they're also very, very receptive to working with entrepreneurs. I'm very excited to just that they exist, right? We had Rick Frischman, one of their, publishers. Is that what he is, David? What does he do for you?
That's right.
Yeah.
So one Rick of the was publisher.
Right. He was on the show about 6 months ago and we really enjoyed talking to him. Well, anyway, David has been recognized as some of the most prestigious awards out there. He was a finalist in the Best Chairman category for the American Business Awards. That's like the Oscars for business people. And he has won Fast Company Awards and all sorts of other things. David, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, I appreciate that. What a privilege it is to be on here. Especially following up somebody like Rick. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I'm going to give my best.
Well, you know, we save the best for last, right?
That's right.
Exactly. David, tell us a little bit about Morgan James and the special place that it holds for entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship books.
Well, I have a big love for Morgan James. And the main reason is because Morgan James Publishing is actually named after my two kids, Morgan and James. Imagine that.
That's a good place to get a name.
That's right. And it sounds like a real company. But 11 years ago, we started this this entrepreneurial publishing idea and ended up naming it after the two kids. And I had nothing to offer. I mean, I had my rugged good looks and a really good idea, and my rugged good looks was questionable. So the really good idea stuck. But that was funny, by the way. Hopefully everybody laughed.
We're
known as the – thank you. We're known as the entrepreneurial publisher because of all the books that we published. Now we're doing this, like I said, about 11 years. A little over 2,000 titles in the past 11 years. A common theme is our authors are entrepreneurial. So even though our core business is the business, the self-help, we publish most of the guerrilla marketing books out there. We do have a great fiction and a faith line, the kids line. We even do movies. The common theme is that our authors are very entrepreneurial. The books are part of a bigger picture. So it's a lot of fun. And my passion is helping professionals or authors, and sometimes they're one of the same, hopefully they're one of the same, achieve their goals by the secret weapon that I call the book. And for me, it's so much fun because we sell a ton of books to the bookstores, but yet when we work with authors, we spend more time helping them figure out ways not to sell a $17 book, but how to leverage their passion, their purpose, and their relationships to grow their business because of the book, or grow their vision or their idea or their cause because of the power of the book. The book is an authoritative tool for them. Like a glorified business card, but it does make a big difference when you look at it from that perspective. I don't know if I answered the question or not, but that was cool.
Well, that was a very good answer, and I love what you said there toward the end about the power of writing a book, and that's why I have so many gurus and book marketing people on the show, and that's why I'm having you on the show, David, because I want the listeners to write a book because it can make such a difference in their career. I agree with that. It was interesting when I talked with Rick a while back. He said that the first thing you do when you get a new perspective guy in the house, woman in the house, is Google and see if their name pops up, if they own their domain name, and how important that is because of what you just pointed out. You're trying to build a larger thing than just one book, aren't you? You're trying to build an entire platform.
That's right. And the neat thing is, in today's environment, it's easy to go from no platform to a really decent platform in just a matter of months, just by following the steps of the successful people that you're emulating or paying attention to. But the book is a powerful tool to get you on the platform quicker.
What are some of those steps? What, say someone comes in, you love their book, and they say, okay, what is Morgan James going to do after the book comes out to help me build this platform? What would you recommend that I do? What's the answer to that, David?
Fortunately, it's actually pretty easy and all duplicatable. It's all about making sure that the public realizes at this point what we already know about that particular author is that they're the right person saying the right thing to the right people at the right time. And that sounds a little bit crazy and it's a little altruistic, but it's true. But how to develop that platform is just to start yesterday, start doing something right away. It's never too soon to start. And in today's environment, the social media, that your online presence is where it's all at. You could actually try to get a platform by buying media space or being interviewed on great radio shows like this or through radio, other radio methods or TV or newspaper or print, whatever. It just doesn't work as well as it used to in the olden days. But what you really need to do today is have an active, engaged social media and web presence. And you need to be current, consistent, relevant, and everywhere. And the end everywhere is not an option because people will go find you or find out about you or hopefully discover you where they're at. So you have to be where they're at, wherever they might be. So we're looking at Facebook, we're looking at Twitter, you're looking at Google+, LinkedIn, YouTube, all those things are very, very important. And in today's environment, there's ways to connect them all together so you don't really spend all day long trying to build this platform. I post on a daily basis and use some technology to help me get there, but it's just a matter of being relevant. And then the current consistent everywhere is just is part of it.
David, which technology are you using? Hootsuite or and how many of the different platforms does your technology tie in? What's your favorite one?
I like Buffer. I use BufferApp.com, and they also have an iOS app as well called Buffer. And what it does is I connect it to all my social media presence and connect it to my blog so that if I blog, it will get sent out to all the rest of my platforms, Facebook, Twitter, fan pages, things like that. And then I use Buffer also to help schedule out my posts. I mean, nobody really has the time or shouldn't have the time to randomly post things throughout the day. So I use Buffer and I just fill it up and it literally buffers out or schedules out on predetermined times when my post will go out. So as I'm waiting for a subway or having breakfast or waking up my eyes or who knows, just got some free time, I'll load some content into my Buffer app and it will automatically kind of go out throughout the rest of the days and weeks. I literally have over 200 posts that are all relevant, of course. That will go up automatically, you know, while I do other things like talk to you.
Fantastic. I hadn't heard of that one. I'll have to look at it and see if it will meet my needs. That's a good piece of advice, though. Something cool that Morgan James does is giving back financially, I think, through Habitat Through Humanity. Is that right?
It is. And it's funny. People say, what's a publisher doing with building houses and home ownership and family dreams. It's like, well, I used to be a builder back in the day. Back in the 90s, I was a residential developer and a mortgage banker. So I have roots back there. But I think it's a great organization. People always think that Habitat gives away houses, but they actually don't. They sell homes to qualified low-income families who have good credit and really want to get out there and hustle. But they sell them at actual building cost over a 20 or 30 year mortgage at zero interest. So it's a hand It's a help, a hand up versus a handout, if that makes sense.
Sure,
and
of course.
And what Morgan James does is we like to raise awareness in Suns form because I think it's a great organization. I'm actually president of the executive board in my local region, but we donate a percentage of all of our book sales across the globe to Habitat, and we try to raise awareness. And I even speak at a lot of the dedications. But one of the funnest things I get to do besides speaking at the groundbreaking dedications is we give the new homeowners a library of great books. So we give them books on how to maintain or create physical wealth, how to have spiritual wealth, kids' books and entertainment books, just to help them, you know, keep that core family together and engaged. It's so much fun.
And it's the right thing to do. I love it. David, someone comes in, a book manuscript comes across your desk. What are the first things you look at, and how do you judge whether it's going to be a hit or not? How do you make your purchasing decisions for what books Morgan James is going to publish?
Oh, I'm going to kind of reel back this curtain for you and share it with you, because this is actually pretty simple, but it makes sense from our perspective, from an entrepreneurial author perspective. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say this to an author before they submit the manuscript. So anybody that's out there listening to this, you're really getting some secret juice here. But for us, 80% of the decision is the author. And I mean that, literally, 80% of our decision is the author passionate? Are they enthusiastic about the topic? Do we think they're the right people or person bringing this message to market? Are they coachable? Are they willing to get out there and hustle? Are they willing to do what successful authors do? Doesn't mean they have to spend money. We just want to make sure that they're willing to get out there and hustle. But we have to get excited about their message and their cause and their purpose. We need to catch that vision. We need to catch that enthusiasm. And the main reason is because if we can't catch it, how are we going to get the bookstore sales reps excited and motivated and passionate to talk about the books to the buyers, who then need to get really motivated and passionate to actually buy the book, who then hopefully one day a consumer might get excited about it. So it really, it trickles down. The other 20% is the book, of course. It needs to be good, obviously. The reader needs to benefit from it. But you can always hire a better editor. I mean, gracious, you can even delete it and hire a ghostwriter if you had to. It's that passion, that enthusiasm, that purpose of the author that you can't create or fix or stir up if it's not already there.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm really intrigued by the idea of you buying 80% and saying, yeah, but your book sucks. Let's delete the whole thing and hire someone to try again. Have you ever done that, David?
Not quite to that extent, but we have given some really good feedback and some suggestions to help them down that path. But we also have turned down books that have ended up on the New York Times and never batted an eye saying that just wasn't right for us because that author was a knucklehead or they weren't passionate or they weren't doing it for the right reasons or they were selfish or something like that. It is a big part of who we are. We thrive on that relationship. We thrive on seeing others succeed, and we thrive on making sure that the reader benefits from it. But you know where I get really excited? You know, of course, 80% is the author, 20% is the book. But where I get really excited is there's a way that reader can connect with the author and grow both lives, whether it's follow-on products or other opportunities or just having that relationship with that reader and that writer. That's where I get really excited.
I like that. What about this? I'm in Dubuque. I have an incredible thing that I'm really passionate about. It's fantastic stuff, but I can't afford to come to New York City and pitch you in person. How is a great way for me to capture that 80% passion, capture my love for my topic, and get it across to you all the way from Dubuque when my only medium would be Skype or something like that?
Well, that's a really good question. Although we do prefer and love when we can meet authors and catch that vision in person, sometimes it just has to be done through either a literary agent, which isn't easy to find, or through, you know, just reaching out to one of our acquisitions editors or to me directly. And starting out with a conversation, whether it's on paper or an email, that just cuts straight to the chase, saying, this is who I am, this is what I'm writing for, this is why I'm doing it, and this is why I think you should be excited. Something really simple. But I will say a couple authors have taken it one step further over the past few years. I think literally less than five, where they actually shoot me a video proposal and send it to me and say, hey, you know, here's me presenting my passion and my enthusiasm for you through video, to catch my attention. And that worked out really well. In fact, I think we ended up accepting every single one of the ones that came to us that way because you couldn't deny it. The authors were brilliant. So that's one way. But for your audience, just to kind of further that revealing the mystique behind the publishing industry. It's really just about reaching out, knowing somebody that knows somebody. So if your audience just wants to reach out to us at morganjamespublishing.com, they mention the radio show, we'll certainly set up a time to talk with them and kind of catch their vision. We won't just look at a piece of paper and make a rash decision without listening to them, because you're teaching them the things that they need to know. You're teaching them to head down the path that makes professionals very successful entrepreneurial authors.
Well, I love that offer. Thank you. We, all the listeners appreciate that. And I hope that all of them, both of them, call David and take you up on that. You know, it's weird. I haven't been able to get an agent, David, but I got published by McGraw-Hill quicker than I could get an agent. You said it's really hard to find an agent. Isn't that weird that I can get published by McGraw-Hill, but I can't get an agent? Does that say that something bad about McGraw-Hill, something bad about me, or something bad about the agents?
Oh, I could never say anything bad about McGraw-Hill. They're a really good company. I think it's just the nature of the business now. The agents traditionally will earn the bulk of their money from the advance that they might be able to get from an author, or for an author from a publisher. Well, the average advance in America right now is $500. So the agents are really struggling to feed their family. I feel for them. The industry has changed, so they're spending as much time as they can on proven authors, older relationships, and they're less willing, less able to nurture relationships with up-and-coming authors or first-time authors or authors who have not yet proven themselves. So it is it's a state of the industry. It's really frustrating.
So what's your advice on finding one? How should someone who's listening who wants to get published do it? Find the agent.
The easiest way, the best way to find an agent is to go to where the agents are. So either go to one of the writers' conference. You know, Rick Frischman puts on a conference twice a year called Author 101. I think it's author101university.com. And he brings in agents and publishers. In fact, I'll be there on stage, and they'll typically have one or two or three competing publishers, all because Rick's got a great passion of helping authors find their right path. And he brings in literary agents and literary managers to introduce them to the authors. So that's like one of the best things to do to find one. Otherwise, you could take a look at the books that are being published and in the genre that you're looking to publish, and pay attention to the acknowledgments. Find out who the author is thanking in their acknowledgments. If they thank an agent, you may want to make a note of that. And if you see that enough, or if you want, you can reach out to them, do a Google search on the agent, find out who they are, and open the door that way. Hey, I saw you published John Doe's book or Jane Doe's book. My book is exactly like his, but better, and try to open up that door. But it's tough, really, really tough. I mean, we get over 5,000 submissions a year. Imagine how many submissions or query letters or intros that the agents get. So I think the best advice, I know I'm rambling on, I'm sorry, but the best advice is to go to where they're at one of the conferences.
All right. I love that advice. That's really good advice. What about this, David? I'm sitting in your office and you've just offered me a $50,000 advance because I've sold 9 great books before and I have a really huge platform. And then I say to you, yeah, but David, I think I can make more if I self-publish. How do you respond to that? Or do you just kick the guy right out of your office and chunk them through the window?
Oh, that's a good question. No, I would never kick them out. I would always make sure we try to educate and encourage them. And I am a huge fan of self-publishing over doing nothing at all. But I'll answer that with this quick little note. The reality is self-publishing is great. It's come a long ways in recent years, and it's really exciting to see. But for us and industry-wide, when people think of self-publishing, they think of Amazon or selling it out of the back of their trunk. That's great. You can still do that. But for us, Amazon is our largest client and is the most publisher's largest client. But they only represent about 24% of our overall sales. That means, now I'm a former banker, so I may round up. So that means 67, 66%, I have no clue. The rest of the business comes from someplace else. Like I said, I'm a former banker. So that means if they're self-publishing, they run the risk of leaving 70-some-odd percent, I'm going to screw these percentages up, 76% of the business on the table, because they might be focusing just on their trunk or just focusing on Amazon, when that's not necessarily where the bulk of the book sales are coming from.
Wow, I had never heard numbers quite that high. That's interesting. It makes me really think about what I'm doing. At this point, I'm only focusing on Amazon because that's just where the book is available now, and so it's easiest just to drive it there. For me, my book's 3 years old, so I'm going to have to really rethink that. Good advice, David. All right. What is your guess? If they spent 1,000 hours writing the book, 500 hours writing the book, how many hours should they expect to spend marketing it?
They should expect to market their book for the rest of their life. And the marketing should start from the moment they decide to write the book and never end. So it's a process that they will never stop doing. For as long as they're interested in the topic, they need to be doing something to market that book. But I will say it's really hard to sell a book. It's really easy to motivate the masses by encouraging them to follow your passion and your purpose and change lives. And I'll give you an example. And hopefully I'm answering the question, but give you an example. One of our first New York Times bestsellers was all about helping people who had websites earn a little extra money on their website by using Google's AdSense program. And it was a book called The AdSense Code. And when that author came to me, he said, you know, David, I have discovered a secret. I have learned how to master this AdSense program where I could teach people to drop a little code on their website and they could earn a few extra $100 a month, a couple hundred dollars extra a month. And that would change their lives. It would help maybe save a family. It would keep food on the table, keep their car from being repossessed, keep their house from being foreclosed. A little bit of effort, a little bit of money could change a life. And he's very passionate about that versus a message of, hey, get rich quick. You can earn millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, you know, by using this AdSense program, by selling ads on your website. And it was just that purpose, that passion of the author, to just focus on a little bit of a benefit that could change their lives and feed them on how they could do that. That's what ended up selling a lot of books. But he is continuing that message all the way through his career. And now I think that book is in its second print edition and seventh ebook edition. And it's still all about the focusing on the market, but he has to keep on marketing it. And he loves keeping marketing it because he's making money from it. But it never, never ends.
That can be daunting. You know, I'm a guy with three kids, and unlike you, I'm looking forward to getting my kids out of the house as fast as possible, David, and getting back to reality. You know, my wife keeps producing new ones, but I'm looking forward to the end of it. So that's a really daunting prospect. The fact that you write this book, that it's going to chase you forever, and that you're going to have to market it forever. That's a huge commitment. I don't know. You might have just scared a lot of people off with that.
Yeah, and that hopefully it would help them decide to write the right book or figure out which book to write first. Make sure that they're writing and they're playing in the space that they're most passionate about. Play with the book that can affect your business the most today. Because, you know, right, what happens if it's a success? And if you really aren't really keen to that topic, you may get tired of it quick. So definitely think about the long term.
All right, great advice. David, we are about to run out of time. Can you leave us with one more little tidbit, something we haven't mentioned, and then tell people how they can get in contact with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to leave you with this one little quick statement. I want you to know that the guerrilla entrepreneurs in your audience, they know that the journey is actually the goal. He also realizes that he is in control of his enterprise, not the other way around. And if he's dissatisfied with the journey, he is missing the point of the journey itself. Unlike old-fashioned entrepreneurs, which often require gigantic sacrifices for the sake of the goal, the guerrilla entrepreneur places the goal of a pleasant journey ahead of the mere notion of sacrifices. So I want to leave that with them and make sure you're putting this perspective in. You need to build balance in your life, faith, family, food, and fun, and then work, and it can all work out really well. So it's a privilege to be here. You can just reach out to me on Twitter, David at David Hancock, or at MorganJamesPublish.com, and even on Facebook.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us, sir. It's been an honor, and we've learned a lot.
Thank you.
Back to real life now. This is, as you know, a repeat from earlier. That file was. And just want to let you know, I still think David is the best. We're out of time for today. Be back tomorrow. Be safe, everyone. Bye.